36, 720 WGN. Matt Bubala on with you until 1 a.m. Thanks for staying up late with us. It's not quite as late on the West Coast, where we are joined by Molly Knight. She is the author of The Best Team Money Can Buy, a tale about the Dodgers when they were most recently sold, but also she is a senior writer for The Athletic in Los Angeles. Hey, Molly, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for jumping on with us. It's good to meet you on the air. I reached out today. I followed you on Twitter for a very long time and always enjoyed the news that you put out and the information you put out. But I definitely wanted to reach out to you, and I didn't know your history or how much you've, because I'm way older than you, so I remember as a kid, yeah. Tommy Lasorda was just a colorful figure in baseball, and he was always fun to watch. And some of the funniest things, just earlier this week, somebody was putting out a video of him getting a mascot kicked out of a game. And it was crap like that that just is so Tommy Lasorda, that the game was more than, you know, ridiculously serious. It was fun. It was a day at the park. And he was just one of those, you know, in Chicago, we had Don Zimmer, and in New York, yeah. Zimmer too. But Zim, as manager of the Cubs, just had that same kind of, to me, Tommy Lasorda feel, where it was more than, you know, just this serious thing. It was a game and it was fun. And it was good to come out to the ballpark to see characters like a Tommy Lasorda.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think in some ways, he sort of became like the Dodgers mascot. And I don't say that as like a to be like he was cheesy or whatever, but he sort of became like this. It was like he became like a culture or something, because he hasn't managed the team in gosh, over 20 years or 20 years or so. And but even young fans know who he is, because he's always around. He's gotten older. He was in his 90s, and he lived pretty hard, you know, and he with the everything that he did, and it was kind of amazing that he stuck around and outlasted everybody. He was really proud of that. He still go to games. They show him on a big screen, and he'd always be spring training and signing autographs, and he'd still be in uniform.
Hey, Molly, hold on for one second. Your phone's breaking up. Let me put you on hold. Let me have my producer, Brennan, talk to you. Let's see if we can get you reconnected there. It sounds like your phone's fading in and out a little bit, but we want to keep talking about Tommy Lasorda. And, you know, and the amazing thing is, as I'm reading about him, he played not a good playing career at all, like made one start for the Brooklyn Dodgers, but sounds like maybe never even left the team and worked for them forever. I don't know if he spent any real time with any other team in Major League Baseball. I think, you know, Tommy famously quoted as saying, "Hey, I'm a Dodger blue all the way through. It's my blood. It's in my, you cut me open, I'll bleed Dodger blue. I pray to the big Dodger in the sky." I don't think Tommy ever had any, Molly, did he ever have any association with any other major league team, or was he Dodgers through his whole life no matter what?
No, he didn't. He was Dodgers through his whole life no matter what. He loved the team, even at times when they didn't love him back. He was sort of phased out as manager. He was cut when he was a pitcher back in, the 50s. And at one point he was cut because they brought up a kid named Sandy Koufax.
Well, that's not bad to get cut for. Yeah.
Not bad, but I think he had a little bit of a rivalry with Sandy. All those years. I mean, obviously they'd known each other for, by this point, 60, 70 years. So it wasn't, they was in good fun. But yeah, you don't really see that in this day and age, especially with free agency and with people kind of going to it. It just seems like even the best coaches, right? Even the best managers, at a certain point they move on, or they overstay their welcome, or something happens, right? A team isn't good anymore, or they get a new owner or a new GM. But he's figured out a way to stick around for forever. And I do think, for his family, I mean, he loved that team, and I do think that was meaningful that they won in October, and he flew to Dallas to be there to see it. And I know, in spite of the pandemic, you know, he's thinking, well, I'm 92, 93, I might not make it to next year anyway, so who cares, you know? Obviously, it was the right thing to do, it was the right move, and I know his family takes comfort in that.
What do you make, Molly, of, you mentioned his longevity, and we rarely see that. Bobby Cox was with the Braves for a very long time, but I look to here in Chicago, Joe Maddon won a World Series with the Cubs. By all rights, in Chicago, he probably should be the mayor right now for life, because that's insane that he's the one guy in anybody's lifetime for a long time who's ever won this. And then a couple years later, missing the playoffs just 1 year, they, you know, mutually decide to part ways. It's crazy to me that we don't give people more time to be a coach and know that the talent level is going to go up and down, and to expect a coach to always win or lose, you know, based on what's there and available when we've got salary caps and all these things, is kind of crazy. I'm surprised that there isn't a little more. We got somebody that won. Let's give him a while before we would ever think of parting ways with them.
I think baseball, too, is especially intense with the 162-game schedule every year, well, at least in non-pandemic years. The grind, the ins and the outs, I think that people can really start to wear on each other, even if they're good friends, even if they're good at their job. I think that that's tough. And I think, especially lately, we've seen how really the general manager or the president of baseball operations who has more control of the team than the manager these days. And, you know, often they're the ones that are involved in, you know, they construct the rosters. And so they're involved in lineup construction, and they're involved in, you know, telling their managers, we don't want these certain starting pitchers to go through the lineup more than, you know, face the lineup more than twice and all that. So it's a little less, it's tough. And you can see how that would be, you know, they'd be head with it and all that. Joe Maddon, obviously a very good manager. He hasn't had much to work with in Anaheim. They see the results last year with no starting pitchers. But I agree with you. I kind of thought he would be there forever, because, I mean, he obviously can't buy a drink in Chicago for the rest of his life. So, but I guess he wanted to come out to, Anaheim and not win as well.
Well, I would think that if the Cubs would have said, hey, we love you and we want you to be here, I would think they could have, you know, because theoretically there were still a lot of named players on that team when they left. Right. And, you know, we still squeaked into the playoffs the first year under David Ross. Now they're decimating everything. But it's surprising to me that.
What a shame that is.
Yeah, thank you. Well, listen, you finally got your World Series. I know you are a big Dodgers fan. And I followed you for a number of years now when the Dodgers kept getting that close and it was killing you every year. Yeah. So congratulations on finally getting there. Let me ask you about, as long as we're talking about managers, here in Chicago, the White Sox just hired back Tony La Russa, who was a White Sox manager when I was a young kid in 83. And now at the age of 76, he'll be back leading a very young, very good team. What do you make of, you're around players a lot and you follow this game very closely. Yeah. These young players today and an old school manager like La Russa, do you think that can be successful?
It's tough. I definitely raised an eyebrow when I saw that hire. Obviously his results speak for themselves. He's won. I mean, he won in Oakland. He won in St. Louis. He's a Hall of Fame manager. So I'm not somebody who thinks you have to be one of these newfangled numbers person, even though I consider myself, you know, sabermetrically inclined. I'm not somebody who believes you have to have grown up with that and come of age during that era and be on that, on the cutting edge of that sort of thinking to be successful. However, it is a concern to think that, you know, you could try to relate to young players at any age. I'm not an ageist in that sense, but it is concerning, to think about some of these young kids and maybe the culture shock that a lot of them are enduring in general and the flair they play with that might be something that La Russa, you know, might not have appreciated in the past. But look, you know, I think more than ever, the myth of the great, like we witnessed with Joe Maddon, who's now not even with the Cubs anymore, I think the myth of a baseball manager in some ways has been torn down. And Chicago White Sox have a great team, and if La Russa is, butting heads with some of these stars, I don't think there's going to be loyalty there. I think they're gonna want to find somebody who can mentor these kids and get them going. I know that the ownership's relationship with La Russa is longstanding, but I gotta think they'll find somebody else if things aren't going in the right direction this year or next year.
Well, it'll be interesting because Jerry Reinsdorf is notoriously very loyal to people, and we got to think that he had a big hand to play in wanting La Russa back. We heard stories that he always regretted that he had, you know, letting La Russa get forced out when he did, and all those things. But I'm looking at Tony's stats now. The crazy thing is his first year managing the White Sox, he was 34. So he probably had to be the youngest manager in the league. Now he will definitely be the oldest. And he's won World Series in three different decades. So if he did it again, it would be the fourth different decade he managed a team to a World Series in.
Wow. I mean, this guy's done it. I think that of course there's value in experience. You know, he's not going to be nervous, or if he's nervous, it's not going to be in the same way as somebody managing their first major league game. And he's obviously had to deal with balancing major egos before. He's had superstar players on his teams. So that's something he knows how to do. We'll see. I mean, it was tough, you know, watching them this year. They were so fun. And then, of course, you know, they lost in the playoffs. They lost to the A's, right? And I watched every single game. It's just my brain has been atrophied by everything, you know, all the virus stuff and everything that's happened in the last last year. But they're a great team.
Yeah, they're a young team. They got there quicker than they expected. And so now there's a lot of heat around them and a lot of people expecting they're entering that window of opportunity.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, and it's great. It's great for baseball to have young, exciting players. And gosh, I mean, I hope for the best for them. They have the White Sox fans have endured quite a run of mediocre ball. I know they won in 2005, I believe, but lately it's not been good. And they've had to watch the Cubs win, and that's been painful as well. So,
thank you for remembering that it was 2005. By the way, it's a big thorn in everybody's side here that whenever ESPN puts up something about World Series championships, they always omit the White Sox, and it drives people insane. And they've done that like three times.
I'll watch every game of that series. I remember it. So, they were. It really wasn't that long ago. I mean, it feels like a lifetime ago in some ways, but it really wasn't that long ago. They just gotta get, like with the Dodgers. They had to make the playoffs a bunch of years before they really pushed forward and made the World Series, and then they had to go to the World Series three times before they won it. And that's what some of these teams with talent have to do. It's not easy. You know, you got to have guys get hot in October. You've got to have the pitching. You've got to have certain things break right. And so the White Sox will need that. And, you know, I hate the idea that, you know, a manager gets fired this year after they don't win a really tight series in the playoffs, but against a very good team. But, you know, that's the way it happens sometimes. And obviously, Mr. Reinsdorf wanted the Ruth in there. And so, you know, it's... He writes the check, so he got what he wanted.
Yes, he did. All right, real quick, before we wrap up with you, Molly, I wanted to ask you, I don't know how much, because I just saw the story tonight, it came out earlier today, about the Angels employee who says he was giving all these pitchers an illegal substance to use. What in the world is this story about? And you know, I thought after the scandal in Houston, this type of thing would die down for a while. But do you think this is just way more pervasive than any of us necessarily suspect? Or maybe the people in the know that it goes on like crazy, and just most of us kind of don't think that this type of stuff is happening all the time?
Yeah, and you know what? I really don't have a problem with it because the hitters don't really have a problem with it, because when you put stick them on the ball, the pitchers have more control over the ball. Some of these baseballs lately have been really slick, and hitters don't want, you know, they want the guy who's throwing 100 miles an hour, because guys are throwing so much harder now, too. They want the guy that's throwing the ball that hard to have a clue where it's going. And if he's not able to grip the ball, then the hitter is looking at potentially getting one behind the ear. So it's something that's been going on forever. I really don't, like I said, I really don't have a problem with it. Of course, I'd have a problem finding out that a certain team or certain players had a crazy advantage over other players. I think it's pervasive. I think, you know, 90% of the players do whatever it is that this guy was accused of doing. And the weird thing is that I kind of agree with him. I mean, he's filed a lawsuit. This Angels for those of you listening who haven't heard about this, the Angels, the visiting clubhouse guy, and the Angels fired him last year and, you know, said that he was accused him of providing stuff to grip a baseball with, a mix of they use all kinds of weird stuff, like resin and I don't even know what else, but they use stuff just to get a better grip on the ball.
And where were they putting it, though? Like, how are they getting they come out with it on their hands and it just rubs off over an inning? They can keep redoing it?
Put it inside their glove, put it inside their hat, okay. And then they can kind of go to their hat and then do it. And I think that it needs to just be out there. Like, MLB needs to address it and just say this is what goes on, and they need to sort of figure out how to better regulate it and better explain to fans that it can be necessary, so that, like I said, hitters don't get hit by fastballs in the face.
Well, why don't they just change the balls? I mean, apparently the balls have gotten slicker. Why wouldn't they, if this is a real issue with pitchers and the pitchers are complaining about it, why wouldn't Major League Baseball look at it? Or is it a situation where these slicker balls are flying out of the park faster and better, so Major League Baseball is like, we're not going to slow that down because that's putting butts in the stands.
There are a lot of questions I have about why doesn't MLB just do XYZ. the baseballs, the changing the baseballs and then trying to cover it up and lying about it when every pitcher is saying the baseballs are different is one of those things. Pitchers, they lowered the seams on the baseball, so pitchers couldn't get they couldn't grip the ball with their fingernails the way or their fingers the way that they normally do, and then that was impacting how much like a cutter would cut or, slider would slide or curveball would break. And then, hitters were just crushing the ball. It was also, affecting the surface area on the ball, which affected drag, which meant the balls were flying out. So who knows why they do what they do and then try to say that they didn't do it.
I imagine those seams, not just the grip, but the way that affects the air as it's spinning towards the plate too, right? The higher seams probably cause it. It's funny, Molly. So here in Chicago, every year around May, I think it was 21st, maybe 17th, we'll see replays of Kerry Woods throwing the 20 strikeout game.
Oh, yeah.
And you see his curveball in that thing. It's like starts out at your head and ends up at your ankles. It's insanity. And you don't, I don't see, I see guys throw 106 miles an hour, but I don't see somebody bend something like that anymore. Now, maybe that's everybody's blowing out their arms before they get there, but it seems like, I wonder if that's part of the baseball thing that people can't throw it like that anymore. It's just not possible.
I mean, he in his heyday though, I mean, he was so special, looked like an all timer. And I'll get to tell you, I have seen that. I've seen Kershaw. I was there and actually blessed enough to be sitting in the second row the night he threw his behind home plate, the night he threw his no hitter. And the ball out of his hand by the second inning, my friend and I had gone in to get some food. And I said, he's got no hit stuff tonight. And of course, the no hitter relies on look too, right? Like a ball, like if you hit like a four hopper, it just goes through the outfield. But the way the ball was moving, it was like you can't. They're not seeing it. They're swinging like just with their eyes closed. The way the ball's moving, I've seen it out of his hand a couple of times. I saw it out of Pedro Martinez when he was on the Mets and the Red Sox, and I saw Randy Johnson throw that way too. But that's really it that I've seen.
Well, those guys are back in the Kerry Wood days. I mean, only Kershaw is out of recent memory there, from what you're saying. And it just seems
Scherzer
like
could do it, but he's more dominant. I'm sure there's probably a better comp, but very, very few had that kind of stuff. But that was one of the best things of all time. I think Kershaw's. I think he struck out 14 that night, walked none, and had there was one error. But I think his game score was still like below Kerry Woods, because Woods struck out, 20 or something? Yeah. I mean, that's just insane.
Yeah.
One of the greatest games ever pitched.
Yeah,
sure.
It was crazy. All right, we got to go here in a minute, but I want to ask you the Padres. Benefiting from our Cubs deciding to save money with you, Darvish, but they also get Blake Snell. They signed the top international prospect. You're saying that's good for the Dodgers, though.
Yeah, I think it is. I think the Dodgers, one of the reasons why it took them 8 years of winning the NL West and not winning the World Series until this year, is because they were kind of able to coast. The NL West has been awful for the most part. I mean, the Giants did win the World Series in there in 2014 as the wild card, but other than that, they haven't really had any competition at all. And it hasn't been good. It hasn't prepared them for October in the way some other divisions have, which is not the same as, like, the AL East or teams where it was like, man, they'll face each other in the ALCS or the NLCS. Just didn't have that vibe. The NL Central was tough for a while. You see, you know, three teams around 100 wins. The NL West has just been kind of a joke. And I don't think I'm alone in thinking that. I talked to Clayton Kershaw recently, and he said he kind of felt the same way. I think it's just, it gives you, it adds more of an intensity in some of those games in August and September when the Dodgers have been on autopilot, frankly. And also it gives these guys a look at some, like, a playoff caliber rotation, like, you know, twice a month instead of maybe once a year. I think it's going to be good. Now watch me eat my words when the Padres knock them out of the playoffs or whatever, but I don't know. I think Dodger fans got mad at me. I think it's fun that the Padres are going for it.
Yeah.
I mean, otherwise, you're just, the Dodger fans are just like, the regular season doesn't even matter anymore. Who cares? Like, wait till October. And that's kind of lame. I mean, it's true, though. When you're just used to going to October every year, you're like, well, whatever, you know?
Yeah.
I'm not going to get worked up over a game in June.
You guys are becoming Braves fans out there. We go every year. We just don't win every year.
Exactly. But the Braves would have won more if not for Mariano Rivera completely, you know, being the greatest playoff pitcher of all time and destroying them. They would have won two or maybe three because they had that rotation, right?
They sure did.
But I think it'll be fun. I mean, I love Tatis. I just think he's wonderful. I think it'll be great. I mean, I love Darvish, too, and I'm really sad about what happened to him.
God.
In the World Series.
I hope he has a great year. He's a great teammate and so funny on Twitter and a good guy, and he had a hell of a year here. Finally had that great year, and then we decide we're going to blow it up again. Molly Knight is a senior writer for The Athletic in L.A., and also the book The Best Team Money Can Buy is available in paperback where books are sold. Follow her on Twitter at Molly_Knight. It's great to chat with you, Molly. We'll do it again during the season, okay?
Okay, anytime.